please. Greetings, everyone. It's time for the Reduced Shakespeare Radio Show.
Yes, the Reduced Shakespeare Radio Show, featuring the Reduced Shakespeare Company. My name is Reed Martin. I'm here with Austin Titchener and Adam Long.
I'm Adam Long. I'm here with Reed Martin and Austin Titchener.
I'm Austin Titchener. I'm here with Adam Long and Reed Martin.
That was Austin Titchener. I'm Reed Martin.
I'm Adam Long.
I'm Austin Titchener. And until the cows come home,
we are the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Today, we're going to be presenting William Shakespeare's tragedies. This is Shakespeare at his most substantial.
You know, Reed, I wish people at home could see the inside of this recording studio, because we've been preparing for this all week, and I wish the people at home could see the piles of notes and books thrown about us all over the walls.
Yeah, tapes and digitally encoded sound effects, half-eaten sandwiches. Look. The whole studio is positively akimbo.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Adam, hey, why don't you fill in the people on what we're going to be covering in the next half hour?
Okay, what we're covering. Well, let's see. According to my notes, Shakespeare wrote 11 tragedies.
Don't forget, though, that we're devoting entire separate programs to Romeo and Juliet and Hamlet.
Exactly, yeah. Romeo and Juliet and Hamlet are separate because they're really big plays. Substantial, as you said before. But still, leaving out Romeo and Juliet and Hamlet, we still got Titus Andronicus, Julius Caesar, Troilus and Cressida, Othello, Macbeth, Anthony and Cleopatra, Timon of Athens, and Coriolanus.
And that's a whole heap and helping of Shakespeare.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Hey, what about the one that was recently attributed to him? I believe that's a tragedy as well.
What one?
It's called the Cardenio, I think, and some scholars believe it's a long-lost Shakespeare play. I thought it might be a tragedy.
Oh, that one. Well, in my research, I've uncovered that Cardenio was actually one of Shakespeare's children's plays.
Shakespeare wrote children's plays?
Oh, yeah, and I'm pretty sure that the one you're talking about is all about King Arthur.
He's lying.
I'm not lying.
You are, too. Your hair on the back of your head is doing that thing it does when you lie.
Shut up,
what
will
thing
you?
Is that?
See how his hair is standing up on the back of
his
head?
Yeah,
right.
Well, at least I have hair.
Hey. Stop it, you guys. Stop. Settle down. Adam. It's not nice to make fun of those people who are follicularly challenged. And Reed, if Adam says that Shakespeare wrote a children's play about King Arthur, we should believe him, no matter how stupid and improbable it sounds. All right, now, apologize to each other and let's get on with this.
Okay, I'm sorry, etc.
Good. Now, before we begin this program of perhaps the greatest works ever written in the English language, let's take a moment to cleanse our oral palates, shall we? For the next 30 seconds, let's prepare to receive the words of the immortal bard by relaxing our ears and calming our minds. On the count of three, I'd like to invite our listening audience to take a few deep breaths and close your eyes.
Unless you're in a car.
A good point. Imagine yourselves lying in a field, in the country, far from the hubbub of day-to-day life. The sun is shining on your face, and there's a warm breeze. Ready? One, two, three. How'd that cow get in here?
Well, don't look at me.
It looks upset.
Well, wouldn't you be if you were a cow in a recording studio?
I guess so. Oh, look, would you go see if you can calm it down before it breaks up?
How come I always have to deal with animals
you have
in the recording
you have
studio?
A way
Austin.
With them.
Oh, okay, right, yeah. Okay, come here, cow.
All right, good.
Cow. All right.
Reed, I believe you've edited our first piece, so shall we?
Certainly, but before we begin King Lear, I believe we have an audio footnote.
Oh, goody!
It's audio footnote time!
The bard's patron, King James of England, was seeking to unite England and Scotland at the same time that Shakespeare was writing King Lear. That Shakespeare chose to show a divided kingdom in King Lear, leading to Shakespeare as either a significant social and political commentator, or possibly as simply a royal ass-kisser.
That was audio footnote time!
Bravo. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, without any further ado, the Reduced Shakespeare Company is proud to present William Shakespeare's epic tragedy, King Lear.
Know that we have divided our kingdom in three.
What shall Cordelia do, love and be silent?
Blow, winds, and crack your cheeks.
Edmund is dead, my lord.
That's but a trifle here. Pray you, undo this button. I die. Ugh!
Well, that was short.
Yeah, I didn't want it to get boring.
I think you succeeded there. I clocked that at under 15 seconds.
Great. You know, I figure Shakespeare used too many words, so I decided to cut out all the unimportant stuff and get right to the sex and the killing.
Right on. Oh, hey, listen. Hey, could I play you my favorite scene from King Lear?
Absolutely. Which one? The storm scene?
No.
Cliff scene.
No. This scene.
Slave, thou hast slain me. Villain, take my purse. If ever thou wilt thrive, bury my body, and give the letter which thou find'st about me to Edmund, Earl of Gloucester. Seek him out upon the English party. Oh, untimely death!
I know thee well. A serviceable villain, as duteous to the vices of thy mistress as badness would desire.
What, is he dead?
Sit you down, father. Rest you.
Yeah, I love that.
Well, what scene is that?
Well, that's the scene in which Edgar, son of Gloucester, kills Oswald.
And what's so great about that?
Oh, man, the Beatles played at the end of I Am the Walrus. Goo-goo-ga-joob, man!
Oh, excellent. Well, shall we push ahead?
Well, let's check with Adam first. Hey, Adman, how's it going over there?
I think I got the cow under control, man. I let her listen to my Walkman.
The cow likes listening to a Walkman?
Yeah, especially Bjork's solo album. The cow is really into Bjork.
Okay, all right. Well, if you've got it under control, we're going to move on.
Okie dokie.
All right. Now, with King Lear down, we still have seven more tragedies to cover, and here in the studio to help us in this pursuit is renowned Oscar-winning classical actress Emma Thompson. Thank you for joining us, Emma.
My pleasure.
Emma, you've performed in most or all of Shakespeare's tragedies during your illustrious career. Which is your favorite?
Well, Austin, I would have to say that would be Titus Andronicus.
Oh, one of Shakespeare's most obscure works.
Yeah, and one of his most melodramatic and violent and bloody.
Is that what attracts you to the play?
Absolutely. Well, that and the cannibalism.
But do you think Titus Andronicus is a play that has resonance for people today?
Oh, absolutely. I would even go so far as to label Titus a women's play, if you will.
Really? A women's play? Oh, is that because of all the blood?
Well, no, not just that, but because although the women are victims of violent crime, they are in fact avenged. The rapists are killed, justice is served. Now, this is a message that women need to hear. And then, after they're killed, they're chopped up and served to their mother in a pie. And therein lies the second point why this is a women's play. The baking and cooking that are the centerpiece of most women's lives today are a central theme in Titus.
Wait, do you really believe that women's lives today should revolve around cooking and baking?
Well, if they don't, I think they should.
How's Kenneth?
Fine.
Is it true that he hasn't spoken to you since you won the Oscar and he didn't?
I have no comment on that.
Is it true that he hopes someday to develop lips?
That is true.
Thank you for your candor, Emma. There you have it, Titus Andronicus, Emma Thompson's favorite Shakespearean tragedy. Emma, I've always found you to be a stunningly attractive woman, but I have to say you look much different in person than you do on the screen.
Yes, that's true.
Would you mind describing yourself to the people listening?
Of course. I'm wearing a tasteful black gown and rubber gloves. I'm about 6'2", blue eyes, and completely bald.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been taken in once again. It wasn't really Emma Thompson here with us in the studio. It was our very own Reed Martin, professional impressionist.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Another accurate and well-studied impression, Reed.
Well, thank you, Austin. But enough of these hijinks and tomfoolery. It's time now for another of Shakespeare's mighty tragedies. Ladies and gentlemen, out there in Radio Land, the Reduced Shakespeare Company is proud to present the tragedy of Othello, the Moor of Venice.
It is the cause, my soul. Let me not name it to you, you chaste stars. It is the cause. Yet I'll not shed her blood, nor scar that whiter skin of hers than snow, as smooth as monumental alabaster. Yet she must die, else she'll betray more men, 'cause she done me wrong. And if you don't hear what I'm saying, you can eat a green Twinkie straight up, mother. She been doing the wild thing all around town, and dissing me, and feeding me a line of bull. I'm tired of this, you know what I'm saying. Othello is in the house, and it's payback time. Yo, 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 here's a story of a brother by the name of Othello. You know, he liked white women and he liked green jello.
And a punk named Iago who made himself a menace because he didn't like Othello, the Moor of Venice.
Now Othello got married to a chick named Desdemona.
He took her for the wars and he left her alone.
It was Amona.
Amona, he left her alone.
He didn't write a letter and he didn't tell Amona. Now Desdemona, she was faithful, she was chastity tight. She was the daughter of a duke.
She was totally white, but Iago was a freak from the planet Venus. He was crafty.
He was sly, he had a big sword.
He said, I'm gonna shaft the Moor.
How you gonna do it? Tell us.
Well, I know his tragic flaws, that he's
too damn jealous.
Need a dupe, need a dope, and need a kind of a schmo.
So he found a chump sucker by the name of Cassio.
And he plants on him Desdemona's handkerchief.
So Othello gets to wondering just maybe if, while he been out fighting, commanding an army,
are Desi and Cass playing hide the salami?
Salami.
So he comes back home and stuck a pillow in her face.
He kills her and soliloquizes about his disgrace.
But there's Amelia at the door,
who we met in Act 4.
Who say, you big dummy, she weren't no whore.
She was pure, he was clean,
he was virginal too.
So why'd you have to go and make her face turn blue?
It's true,
it's you. Now what you gonna do when a fellow say,
damn, this is getting pretty scary.
So he pulled out his blade and committed Harry Carey.
Iago got caught, but he probably copped a plea.
Loaded up his bags
and moved to Beverly
Hills, that is.
Thank you, Bossy, and welcome back to Scottish Highland Discs, the program where we ask which recordings you'd like to have with you if you were stranded in the Scottish Highlands. Our guest today is our own Adam Long of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Adam, before the break, you mentioned an obscure recording you'd like to have with you in the Scottish Highlands.
Yeah, that's right, Austin. In researching this program on the tragedies of William Shakespeare, I unearthed a rare audio recording of Shakespeare's Scottish play, Macbeth.
Really?
Yes. Carbon dating now, Austin, has proven that this audio recording is from the mid-1600s, which makes it the
Adam, an audio recording of Macbeth in the 1600s?
Yeah, that's kind of old, isn't it? But it is on 8-track cartridge.
Well, that is old. That's very old.
Yeah, I know. It's freaky, huh? But and it's been confirmed by scientists.
What scientists?
Top secret ones, okay? So anyway, will be the first ever broadcast of a long-lost 8-track recording of Macbeth, the Scottish plays, and it is performed in authentic 17th century Scottish accents.
Whatever.
Okay, roll it, Reed.
10-4, good buddy.
Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron rubble.
Stay, you imperfect Mac speakers. Mac, tell me Macmore.
Macbeth, Macbeth, beware. Women bairn shall harm Macbeth till Birnam Wood come to Dunsinane, don't you know?
Ah, well, that's dead great. Then McWhat, McNeed, McI, McFear of Macduff.
Aha! See you, Jimmy, and know that Macduff was from his mother's womb untimely ripped. What do you think about that?
Ah, that's bloody disgusting. Lay on your great haggis breath, ye.
Aha! Ah, Macbeth, you killed my wife, you murdered my bairns, you evacuated your bowels in my stew.
Ah, I didn't.
Oh, ah, you did. I had to throw half of it away.
Ah! You've severed me head.
Behold, where stands the usurper's cursed head? Ah, Macbeth, your heirs is oot the windy. And know that never was there a story of more blood and death than this, a Mr. and Mrs. Macbeth. Thank you.
Meanwhile, Julius Caesar was a much-beloved tyrant.
All hail Julius Caesar!
Hail, citizens!
Who was warned by a soothsayer,
beware the Ides of March!
The great Caesar, however, chose to ignore the warning.
What the hell are the Ides of March?
Well, that's the 15th of March!
Why, that's today!
Et
tu, Brute!
Countrymen, lend me your rears! I come to bury Caesar, so let's bury him and get on to my play. Antony
and Cleopatra. Hit it! Here's the tragedy of Antony and Cleopatra by my main man, Willie, so I'm gonna rap it at you. That's no lie, don't ask why. Let's start with dramatis personae. There's Demetrius, Ventidius, Comitius, and Silius,
Adam, stop it for a second.
Antony and Cleopatra, what's your problem, man?
You seem to have some bizarre notion that all of Shakespeare's tragedies can be reduced to bad rap songs.
And take off that stupid wig.
Hey, man, dreadlocks are hip, so back off.
It doesn't matter, man. This is radio. Nobody cares what you wear. Look at me. Look at this. I'm completely naked from the waist down. I happen to feel more comfortable that way.
I wish you hadn't mentioned that.
Oh, relax. Look, Adam, the point is that Antony and Cleopatra is a romantic thriller about a geopolitical power struggle between Egypt and Rome.
Oh, it's one of Shakespeare's geopolitical plays.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, if I'd known that, I wouldn't have screwed around with it like that, because Shakespeare's geopolitical work is my favorite stuff of his.
Really?
So, yeah, totally, because it's intense, man. Like, the themes that Shakespeare was writing about 400 years ago are still relevant today.
That's true.
It is, I know. Yeah. What was that one he wrote about how nuclear energy caused the sort of dissolution of the Soviet Union?
Adam, Shakespeare never wrote a play about nuclear energy.
No, I know it sounds improbable, but it was called Chernobyl Kinsman. And it had the thing
Adam, what are you talking about?
It was called Chernobyl Kinsman, man. It had the thing where the reactor Mr. Rod's feud.
Adam,
okay,
Shakespeare wrote a play called Two Noble Kinsmen.
Not Chernobyl Kinsmen.
Two Noble Kinsmen.
Well, what's Two Noble Kinsmen about?
Two Noble Kinsmen is about a girl who goes insane with the fear that her boyfriend's going to be eaten by wolves and her father hanged.
And is there anything in it about Boris Yeltsin?
No.
Well, I've never even heard of that one before.
Well, of course you've never heard about it because it's not actually one of Shakespeare's... Oh, I should explain.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead?
I'm sorry. All right, well, Two Noble Kinsmen actually falls into the category of Shakespeare's plays that we scholars refer to as the Apocrypha, or in some scholarly circles, the obscure plays. And sometimes the lesser plays. And often quite simply the bad plays. But not all of the Apocrypha are entirely without merit. In fact, one of them, Troilus and Cressida, is hardly crap at all. In fact, I discussed Troilus and Cressida in depth in my new soon-to-be-released book about Shakespeare entitled I Love My Willie, which I happen to have right here. Let me just whip it out.
Oh, man, look at the size of that thing.
Yeah, it's very thick, isn't it? Thank you. What I was thinking I could do is read this short chapter about Troilus and Cressida for the listening audience. Troilus and Cressida was registered in 1603, published in 1604, and appears in the first quarto.
Oh, man, this is so boring. Now Austin's going to read for like half an hour. Come on, Reed, couldn't we do something else?
Like what?
I don't know, anything. Let's do Coriolanus.
Oh, I don't want to do Coriolanus.
Why? What's wrong with Coriolanus?
I don't like the anus part.
Oh, please.
I find it offensive, and there might be kids listening.
So we got to just sit here and listen to Austin read?
Well, supposedly by two actors from his company.
Yeah.
But even that we don't know exactly.
Man, this sucks. Come on, Reed. You're trying to tell me that this is better than my rap version of Anthony and Cleopatra?
I told you, Adam. Anthony and Cleopatra has nothing to do with rap.
Oh, yeah? Well, where does Cleopatra come from?
Egypt.
And what continent is Egypt on?
Africa.
Africa. African-Americans. Rap. Boom. Hit it. There was a real hot mama, and her name was Cleo. A babe born in Egypt, but she moved to Italy. She hooked up with a dude who was built like a tree. Her old man's name is Mark.
And now, something for the children.
Welcome back to the exciting conclusion of William Shakespeare's long-lost children's play, Cardenio, in which King Arthur and brave Sir Lancelot do battle with evil Mordred. As you remember from last episode...
King Arthur was returning from a quest, stout Lancelot by his side. They had found a holy grail to bring to Arthur's bride. Arthur was a wise, wise king. The villains he would flog. He could fight the strongest beast, and he could hold his grog. And by his side there yet did ride a man, there is no doubt, whose helping hand throughout the land was known both strong and stout. Yea, stout and strong as the day was long stood Lancelot the Stout. And that he were a stout young cur, let no man have a doubt.
Whoa! I'll have you know, I am by name Stout Lancelot. I am the same. I be Arthur's trustiest knight. I help him eat. I help him fight. I help him go to sleep at night. Rough and ready is my life, full of celibacy and strife. So I dine healthfully, get plentiful sleep, do goodly sport, and give wide birth to sheep.
And as they gaily rode along, they sang this happy riding song.
We'll be off and anon with a hither and anon, and a hey nonny nonny and a hey nonny non.
Oh, Lancelot, 'tis a fine, fine day. The air is fresh and clear.
But, Arthur, I do not yet see a sign of Guinevere.
Yes, I would say she is not here, and this much I do know, that though she may yet be quite near, I know not where to go.
Oh, Arthur, you have spoken wise.
And you have spoken stout.
Let us search both high and low.
Yes, let us look about.
They did search both long and hard to find fair Guinevere. They did search both high and low, and still they did not see her. And yet they searched both up and down. They searched both in and out. Arthur still stood brave and strong.
And Lancelot was stout.
A message good I have right here to Arthur King from Guinevere.
I am King Arthur, I'll have you know.
Then here is your message, now away I doth go.
Good Arthur, tell me, what is written?
It says, to Arthur King of Britain, I have kidnapped Guinevere, that is why you do not see her. But if you wish to see your adored, bring me Excalibur, your sword, sincerely and forever Mordred.
Oh, what a foul piece of slime.
His poem didn't even rhyme.
We must slay that fiend and rescue her.
I won't give up Excalibur to Mordred's castle, dark. dark and black, I have a plan. We will attack. We will battle lance and spear. We will rescue Guinevere.
In the name of God above, we'll kill and maim to win your love.
We will mangle, burn and loot, crush and kill and kick some boot.
Crucify, assassinate, massacre, eviscerate.
Remove their spinal cord and spleen, behead them all by guillotine.
They will join a host of martyrs. I will wear their guts for garters.
Enough of fond anticipation. Let's commit some mutilation to Mordred's lair of wizardry. I just be wondering where it be.
Why, there it is. Look, there's the moat. We can cross it in a boat.
I see it now upon the crest, a castle black.
What's the address?
We will go there now and here. We will rescue Guinevere.
We'll be off and on with a hither and a yon and a hey nanny nanny and a hey nanny nan.
The way was hard, the slope was steep, the sun was sinking low. Our hero's strength had ebbed as they a dragon's lair approached.
Of Dar-diddle-dee, fell and deadly, as you can see, fell and deadly, and witty and wry, huge and hungry, that be I, so shake and shiver whilst I bellows, ye naughty-pated foolish fellows. I am slain.
Hey kids, hope you're enjoying our fun little story. We're going to take another break here. Right now, we're going to take a moment to respond to letters we receive from kids in a segment we call Viewer Mail.
What? Viewer Mail?
Yeah, Viewer Mail.
No, shouldn't it be Listener Mail? I don't think we have any viewers.
Hey, are you kidding? We've got millions of viewers out there in Radioland. Our letter today comes from 8-year-old Tommy, who lives in Pontefract. That's a funny name. Tommy writes, "Dear Reduced Shakespeare Company, I have a serious problem. My father has lost all of his hair and looks old before his time. He is very sad about it, and I try to make jokes about it to cheer him up, but when I do, he hits me. I think he is overly sensitive about being a baldy."
Adam, that's enough.
What? I'm just reading the letter,
man. Knock it off. Come over here and say
No, come on, don't start fighting again.
Oh, would you please? Oh, well, listen, while Adam and Reed sort out their differences, we'll return to Cardenio, the story of Arthur and Lancelot. When we left our story, Arthur and Lancelot were celebrating their slaying of the dread dragon.
Oh, what a joyous joy of life, to slew my foe through knightly strife. Now his pate lies cleft and riven. Hard work, aye, but 'tis a livin'. So lead on, Lance, I feel the blood of heroes in my veins. Let's find the next bad beastly beast and bash its beastly brains.
But just outside the dragon's lair, they came upon a lock of hair.
Jove be praised, this is a sign, for none but Guinevere hath hair so fine.
This thistledown, these gleaming strands, this angel hair within your hands, these flaxen braids, this silken thread, was surely ripped from Guinevere's head. So on we ride, and on, through forest, grass, and heather. Your love must be a mighty one.
A true love lasts forever. Longer than a day in spring, longer than the birdies sing, longer than the longest word, bigger than a cattle herd, sharper than a pointed stick, softer than the softest brick, wetter than the English coast, wilder than a piece of toast, brighter than the darkest night, righter than the longest right.
Oh, what a beautiful eagle's nest! The natural place to stop and rest!
I am the eagle of Mount McFred! Who dares to make my nest his bed? I'll scratch at you till you are dead!
Why is it, eagle of Mount McFred? You sound like the dragon who of late is dead.
Because it's Adam playing both parts.
Them's okay. Frightened words!
Hey, dragon, look over there!
Where?
Thus, with his wits, the King of Brits had beat his mighty foe. But Guinevere seemed nowhere near, and Arthur filled with woe.
Oh, woe is me, I am woeful. Oh, filled with woe am I. Alas, alas, alack-a-day, oh me, oh my. Forsooth, for shame, for fie, for fend, oh drat, oh dread. That's all, the end.
And even as our heroes wept with tears beyond the telling, Arthur found a golden ring within the eagle's dwelling.
Oh, Jove be praised, another sign, for none but Guinevere hath hands so fine.
This seamless orb, this shining band of brightest gold from distant land, first beaten soft, then polished flat, would not have fit if she were fat.
Help, Arthur, help! Help, Arthur, help!
Oh, what was that? Oh, what did I hear?
It's me, it's Guinevere!
Shut up, you troublemaker!
Oh, Arthur, look! Oh, looky there!
Oh, yes, 'tis Mordred's evil lair!
Fie on you, Arthur, fie on your head! I'll fight with you till you are dead!
Let me at him!
Lancelot, he drew his sword, all ready for a fray. But Mordred was a cowardly lout and bravely ran away. Up to the highest tower Lance pursued his goodly prey, and there they fought all through the night and through the goodly day. Mordred punched Lance in the face and kicked him in the groin. He tweaked his nose and poked his eyes. It truly was annoying. Then Lance was angered, his venom rare, his eyes were full of dread, and with his mighty sword, he hacked off Mordred's mighty head.
Now Mordred's head lies in the mud. He is dead, out of blood.
Oh, Arthur!
Oh, Guinevere!
I knew that you would find me here. I was never too downhearted. I knew you'd come.
I haven't started. Let me clasp you to my bosom.
Oof, be careful now. Don't bruise him. Let's be delicate and gentle.
What, you think me sentimental? Let me ravish you as a beast would.
Take me then, you ersatz Eastwood.
Wait, let's avoid a lawsuit later. May I?
Yes, procrastinator. I cannot wait to feel your rod. Let me see it. Oh, my God! I'm stunned by the surprise of it.
Yes, that's about the size of it. Who will take my staff so special?
Oh, I think my turgid flesh will.
Praise the Lord, I'm a believer. Let me kiss and leave.
You're the best of all my suitors. Oh, oop, again.
Yes, my love, I'll. And then, like a beggar to the larder, I will.
Oh, me harder. And now I want you to. Oh, truly, we have all the luck. Thank you for that splendid.
Thank God we had these sound effects to cover up the sound of sex. I knew that you could never doubt me.
What about Lance?
Yeah, what about me?
Ah, Lance, you are stout and trusted.
No, I'm not. I'm just disgusted. I resume my quest for the Holy Grail.
Get thee to a nunnery.
For what?
Some holy tale.
Thus and so we end our happy tale and see how true love doth prevail. Life is God's gift that keeps on giving. So just remember these three rules for living. Eat right, sleep tight, do goodly exercise, and life's full splendor will poke you in the eyes.
Well, Adam, I gotta hand it to you. You were right about Shakespeare's children's play.
I know.
Hold on a second.
What?
Well, first of all, that wasn't a tragedy, because all of Shakespeare's tragedies end with the death of the main character, and in this one, all the main characters lived happily ever after.
Oh, man, just loosen up.
Second of all, how can you claim that was Shakespeare's long-lost play Cardenio when the character Cardenio never appears?
He died.
What?
He died, man. Yeah, that's it. Cardenio died, and that's why he didn't appear
in the play. Oh, you're making this up.
Yeah, no, it's definitely true. It's called The Tragedy of Cardenio because Cardenio is in it, but he dies. And because he dies, it's a tragedy, so there. And
don't tell me, and I'm bald, right?
That's right. Yes, folks, contrary to earlier reports, Reed Martin remains thoroughly bald at this hour.
Well, I got it. Hello, Radu Shakespeare Radio Show. You don't say. You don't say. You don't say.
Who was it?
He didn't say. No, I'm sorry. Wait. Actually, that was William Shakespeare calling to apologize for the poor quality of Cardenio. He admitted that it really wasn't one of his better plays.
Wait a minute. That was Shakespeare?
Yeah.
And how come Adam's hair is doing that thing it always does when you lie?
Oh, really? Come on, Reed. Back off. Okay, look. Cardenio wasn't so hot, but Shakespeare did write some killer lines, like, life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. So I reckon, you know, we can cut the dude some slack.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm pleased to say that those bells mean that we're just about out of time. I think we've all learned a lot today about Shakespeare and his tragedies, his alleged children's plays.
We've learned how to placate a cow.
And we've learned that sex between two loving, caring, consenting adults can be sweaty and disgusting.
And next week, they'll apply the same intellectual rigour to the history plays. The Reduced Shakespeare Radio Show featured Adam Long, Austin Titchener and Reed Martin, and was a laughingstock production.